Hey, tennis fans, you are listening to Matchpoint Canada, the official podcast of Tennis Canada. We're also members of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. I'm Ben Lewis, joined alongside Mike McIntyre. We have our first Masters 1000 on clay in the books, Mike, with, I might say, surprise champion Stuttgart beginning this week. And you had the opportunity to speak with a former world number one in doubles, former Grand Slam champion in Lucy Safarova.
Yeah, and someone who always excelled on the clay courts as well. So I feel like a really timely moment to have her back on the podcast. We spoke with her, I believe it was 3 or 4 years ago now. So time really flies. That was around like the beginning of COVID. And here we are, and so much has happened since then. But, you know, what hasn't changed is what a great career she put up, both in singles and doubles. I think really of her generation, one of the best in terms of having those high levels of success in both those domains. And just so nice to talk to, such a great person to have back on, so much positive energy. And she kind of got into a little bit of maybe making a possible return to the tennis court, at least in doubles this summer. So have a look, have a listen to my interview with Lucy Safarova, where she'll tell you a bit more about that and much more. Today, we're excited to welcome back to Matchpoint Canada a returning guest who was once a top five singles player and number one doubles player on the WTA. She has 5 Grand Slam titles to her name in women's doubles, captured singles titles across the tour, made the finals of Roland Garros in 2015. On the international stage, she's also won a bronze medal in doubles at the 2016 Rio Olympics and captured the Fed Cup an amazing 5 times. Lucy Safarova, welcome back to the podcast.
Hello, nice to be back.
You know, when I say that introduction, I almost have to stop myself when I say 5-time Fed Cup, now Billie Jean Cup champion. I got that right, am I correct?
Yes, you're correct. We had a great team.
I mean, obviously, that just speaks to the depth that you have in Czech tennis. And here in Canada, for us, winning it for the first time last fall for Canada. So that was a big deal. But maybe we start there. What was it like for you to be a part of such an incredibly talented group of tennis players growing up?
Obviously amazing. And the generation is still like, we have lots of young ones coming up. So it's really nice to see that tennis is really a big sport in Czech. And I think it's an amazing sport. I still love it.
There's just so much depth there on the Czech side of things that we can't help but be a little bit jealous of it and try and use you as inspiration here in Canada. But we feel like we're certainly developing that young talent, and having the Davis Cup champions and the women's champions internationally too obviously speaks to building that program. Who was it for you that inspired you growing up to become a professional tennis player and encouraged you that, you know, you could do it one day too?
From the top players, I would say Steffi Graf, Lindsay Davenport. I liked those two. I was lucky enough to be able to hit few balls with Steffi Graf when I was around 9 years old. Wow. So that obviously increased my love for her. And my big sister obviously as well, because she's 10 years older and I was always seeing her playing tennis. So she was like my first idol, because we are a big tennis family.
Steffi Graf for me was definitely one of my idols growing up. Watching her at Wimbledon in particular is like a vivid memory of my childhood. I never got to hit with her, mind you, but
She was such a lovely person also off the court, you know, and that's what I really admire when they are such a superstars, but they are still down to earth and, you know, just seeing a little girl somewhere and, you know, saying, "Oh, come hit with me," was just something amazing.
I'll bet. I speak to all of the current players quite regularly, but when I speak to a former player, like someone I looked up to as a kid, it still gives me kind of goosebumps. Like I still feel like I'm talking like I'm a kid again. You know what I mean?
All the memories are coming back.
That's it. Now you're on the retired side of things as well. And I can't believe it's already been almost 5 years since you officially hung up the racket at Roland Garros in 2019. Does it feel like it's been that long for you? And how has retirement been these past few years?
Not at all, actually. When someone says that, I'm like, it's been really that long, and it feels like yesterday almost. I wouldn't say yesterday, but I wouldn't consider it 5 years. And obviously, it's been busy because I had two kids. I had Thalia, she turned 4 in December now, and we have Ollie, who's turning in May too. So it's been
Congratulations.
super busy, and I'm very happy to have my family. And Leah's playing already a little tennis with my grandpa's with my dad, so her grandpa. And yeah, we're having fun hitting a little balls on the parking lot and with a little net. And yeah, I'm just happy that she's doing sports and that she's active like that.
You seem like you're in a really good place. You seem really happy. And it's fun getting the kids out there. I can imagine as a former tennis player as well, extra motivation. But even for me, getting my kids out in the backyard and hitting a few balls with them is so much fun just to see that enjoyment and try and get them to enjoy the sport. Would you ever want your kids to grow up and try and choose a similar path to you or your husband, Thomas, who was a professional hockey player, a professional
Yeah. I
athlete
mean,
as well?
I obviously get a lot of these questions from people around, especially like Leah being a girl. So it's like, is she gonna play tennis? And Ollie being a boy, is she gonna be a hockey player? Is he gonna be a hockey player? So, well, we see. I'm leaving it totally up to them. I just want them to both do sports because we are obviously sports family, and we love to do all kinds of sports. So I want them to join our lifestyle and have the love for any kind of sport. And if she is good, and if she chooses that she wants to go the way to try being a pro, I would help her, but I definitely will not push her to go that way because I know it's a tough road, and there are a lot of ups and downs, and it's not easy. But if she would come and say, "Mom, you know why I want to play tennis," I would definitely help her.
Or play hockey and pick up a hockey stick like her father. My
Yeah, of
little.
course. That's Tom's department. So
Right.
I'm gonna be just the mom who's cheering from the stands, and I cannot do much there unless bringing them for practices. But I said those practices are usually very early, so that's not. I'm gonna be the tennis mom.
Yeah, leave that to him. My wife and I do
Yeah.
similar. I coach the hockey and she coaches the baseball. So I coach in the
Okay.
wintertime and then I leave the baseball to her and vice versa. And it works for us, you know?
Nice, nice. Yeah.
Now, tennis skill obviously runs in your family. And you made an appearance last fall and surprised, I think, some people who saw your name in an ITF draw where I believe it was your niece that was also playing. And,
Yes.
unfortunately, I guess you had to stop because it involved sort of announcing you were maybe coming back, which was not your intention. But maybe you could just tell us a little bit about playing that event and how it felt to be back out there, even just briefly.
Yeah, so I promised my nieces that we will once play at least one event together, doubles. And yeah, we chose last year that it was a good time for us to try. We got a wild card for the tournament in France, in Reims. But I didn't know that after officially being retired, if I want to play any kind of event, I have to sign up again for everything, and especially anti-doping, because I was ranked still high enough when I was retiring that I had to fulfill the WADA. And so the official requirement is to sign up and be tested for 6 months until I can appear on the court. And I had no idea this rule was in place. So, and no one told me, not even the
I guess the
tournament
tournament didn't know,
director or
right?
the supervisor. No one knew. So unfortunately, I played my first match. I won it, but then I got the email from anti-doping that I cannot continue in the tournament. So that was very unfortunate because we were very eager to play. Yeah, then I was a little bit bitter after that. I was like, I don't want to, go back to the WADA testing and everything. But Now I did sign up for
Oh,
it,
good. I was
and
going to ask you. So is there the plan then for you and your niece to play together at some point?
So I cannot play until 6 June, but after that I want to fulfill my promise and play with each of them at least one event. And also happened that I spoke to Bethany, my former partner, that we were very successful together, obviously. And
That's for sure.
so we should play the tournament in Prague, which is in July. And then we see. I mean, she's playing now with Sofia Kenin, and they were doing very well. So we see if we play some more events or if we stick only for this one. So I might be back a little bit.
I like what I'm hearing, and if I can just suggest, the National Bank Open in Toronto this summer here in Canada, I'm sure they would love to have you playing there. I have no control over this, of course, as I speak this, but obviously your tennis fans here in Canada would love to see you again. That's really great news. That must be really exciting. I mean, even if it's just on a short-term basis or what have you, we've seen so many moms come back and have success recently with Caroline Wozniacki and Angie Kerber, and there's many of them. I feel like there's so many moms that are playing now and balancing that life. How difficult must that be, do you think? And does it ever cross your mind to make more of a comeback or just more for fun?
I think it's a trend now to come back with kids, which is great. But obviously I started more training now, and I was still like being very active. It's not like I would be starting from total zero. We are very active with my husband in sports. But of course now I'm training more for myself, and it is difficult. First of all, I'm not that young anymore, and then
Well, you're younger than
obviously,
I am, so.
obviously with the two kids, especially being this little, they don't give you a break. So it's kind of your days go from nonstop to total nonstop. So the break, what I get is actually on the court when I go to play. But so far I'm managing okay. I think the hard part is to travel with the kids, especially overseas, when it's longer flights and changing time zones and that. So I admire the moms that can do that. I also decided to play a few events because my husband Tom, obviously, he quit his professional career, and so we have more time until he starts his new job. He is now the co like assistant of the coach of the national hockey team here.
Oh, right on.
But it's not like a every week job. So we can travel as a family, which means a lot to me because I don't think I could travel and not seeing him and not seeing the kids, that I wouldn't be able to do that. But to travel as a full family and to enjoy, and also for Leah to see me play tennis because she never saw me play an official match. So I think it would be fun. So we see how it goes.
That sounds amazing. And I think of players like Serena Williams, and look at Venus is still playing, and Martina
Yeah, that's
Navratilova had
amazing.
such a long career. I mean, you're young still. You've got lots of time ahead of you if you want to come back and play for sure. This is an interesting year because obviously it's an Olympic year, and you had success at the Rio Games, picking up a bronze medal in doubles. This summer, it's going to be particularly challenging for the players, maybe, to transition from clay to grass, back to clay to play the Olympics in Paris, and then to hard court. How do you see that challenge presenting itself for players to make so many surface changes in such a short amount of time?
Well, obviously it's not easy. It can cause injuries, but I think there is still like a little time. It's not like I don't think the Olympics, there is a week before or the in between, no?
Yes.
So I think there is a little time, and I think in Paris the Olympics will be very special and amazing. So as London was, and they are very organized, I think, as well. So I think it will be great.
For you, the Olympic
Obviously,
Games. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, obviously it's not easy transition here back, but as a tennis player, you are used to changing surfaces and even going from, I don't know, even going from hard to hard. Each hard court is a little different, so you are used to adjusting every week to different conditions. So I hope it's gonna be as smooth as possible for the players.
The Olympic Games are so interesting in tennis because we value or put a lot of emphasis on the four majors, the Grand Slams, and it's only once every 4 years. So for some players, they might only ever get one chance, even if they're lucky, to make an Olympic Games. How does your Olympic experience sort of stay with you all these years later, and what importance did you give it in the overall career that you had?
Well, to me, it was, on the same level as the Grand Slams. I know that for some tennis players, the Olympics doesn't mean so much, but for me, I was lucky enough to play three Olympics, and I always love to be part of that event. I think it's amazing to be in the village, to see all the athletes, to talk to them, to, I managed to see some of the friends to compete at the Olympics, so that's also a unique experience. And of course, to have the medal and to stand there and to be able to have the medal on your neck, I think it's a very special experience, and I treasure it same as the Grand Slams. So for me, it meant a lot.
And the doubles gets quite a bit of prominence in the Olympics as well, with women's, men's doubles, and mixed doubles too. You were one of the best of your era at balancing, I feel like, singles and doubles, and being so successful in both, which is so challenging to put that much time on court. The ATP is trying some doubles changes on the men's side. I'm sure you've probably heard about them, in terms of trying to shorten the amount of time between points, having fans moving around even between the points, and allowing some players to get into doubles draws based on their singles rank instead of their doubles rank. I don't know if the WTA is going to follow suit and try them as well, but I was curious, as someone who played so much doubles and at the highest level possible, what do you think of those proposed changes as they try and sort of change the marketability, I guess, of the doubles game?
Well, I think, this is a question for tennis as a sport in general, because we have this huge disadvantage that we don't the matches are not run on time, but on points, right? So you don't know if the match will be 1 hour or 3 hours, which makes a huge disadvantage for the TV, for the fans. You don't know when your player is playing, not even a day, maybe sometimes, if it's Monday or Tuesday. Sometimes it's the first round is run on 2 3 days. And obviously still in tennis to sit quiet, not being able for the fans to talk and to have more fun on the events is, well, I think we are one of the few sports to have that. And I personally wouldn't mind if tennis would do some changes, but obviously it's tough to change fully the scoring because this is how our sport is, and it would change the dynamic completely. But I think we should do some changes, otherwise all the really young people, they like action, they like to have more fun, and for our sport to be so quiet and still so traditional, we might lose some of the, young people who would like to play maybe or come to tournaments. So I wouldn't be opposed to some of the fun changes.
Yeah, well said. I know I'm kind of rediscovering doubles now in my early 40s because it's a little bit easier on the body. So, and we love it here. I mean, at the tournament here, you get some great pairing. Some of the singles players, when they come to Canada, want to play the doubles too to get their hard court summer season going. It's a great
And I
atmosphere.
honestly, I think doubles is amazing. Like it's so much fun. There are a lot of fun exchanges, volleys or going back, and I think it's lacking a little bit of credit compared to the singles. Which is a pity because if we look at the padel tennis, which is huge in Europe, especially in Spain, it's mostly doubles, right? And there's almost no singles, and so why is it not like that in tennis? I don't know. It's just, I guess, going back from history, the singles was always meaning more, but doesn't mean that it's so much more fun.
I completely agree with you. I wanted to ask you as we kind of wrap up about any Canadian memories you have from playing the National Bank Open. You did make the semifinals, I believe, once in singles and the quarters a couple of times. I think running into Serena Williams maybe on more than one occasion. And in doubles, you won the doubles title in Toronto one year. So what memories stick out for you in terms of playing in Canada and just the overall sort of vibe of being here in this country too?
Oh, I love Canada. We were last year with Tom going back to Montreal, and I was lucky enough that the event was going on, so I went to see. We saw actually some of the Czech players and Bethany playing doubles, so it brought a lot of great memories back. I always love to play, compete. I think they are amazing fans. We had always great crowds there, and obviously having a Canadian coach and also coming there to practice, it felt always like a second home to me. And yeah, I think it's an amazing country.
Shout out to Rob Steckley, your former coach, who
Hi to Rob.
we have Rob on the podcast at least once or twice a year. And I was just speaking with him this morning. I said, "Hey, guess who we're speaking to today on the podcast?" So he was very happy to hear you'd be back on with us. And what a fun personality. What a great guy. We talked about him with you last time. He,
Totally.
people like that really bring the fun to the sport, don't they?
Exactly. He's amazing personality, and always have great laughs with him on and off the court. So, and yeah, he makes the trainings always enjoyable, even if it's a grind.
He's working very closely with our Canadian juniors now, and I know for them, just making that time in their lives fun, which I think is so important. And hey, before I
That's great.
wrap up with you, I have to mention, as a lifelong Montreal Canadiens fan, because that's where I'm born and raised, your husband Thomas Plekanec played with them for many, many years, was very important on those teams. Do you two follow the Habs very much? Does he keep an eye on them throughout the season? I know this year's been a little tougher, but I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, he of course he's following, and sometimes I see him in the morning, having his morning coffee, and because he's not waking up in the night for the matches, but he's looking at the highlights. And so he obviously, because he's also the assistant coach now, so we have hockey, and hockey, and I'm trying to push a little tennis in between.
Well, good luck with that challenge. I hope you're successful. And I hope you're
Thank you.
successful, regardless of results. Just having fun when you come back to the court. We'll be
Thank you very much.
definitely watching and would love to see you here in Canada. Thank you
Yeah,
for
I would love to.
taking the time today again, Lucy. It's great to have you back on, and we'll hopefully chat
Thank
again in the
you.
future.
Yeah, sometime soon. Take care.
There you have it, Mike's conversation with Lucy Safarova. And yeah, I feel like we can say you broke some news on this podcast because if the intention was pretty clear, she wants to make a return and play doubles in Prague with Bethany Mattek-Sands and kind of see where it goes from there. But it sounds like that's the full intention to, at the very least, play that tournament.
And it's interesting to me. I think really it's come out of the fact that she had committed to her niece, who's a talented young Czech player, to play doubles with her at some point. And how weird that last year when they got out there, she had to actually withdraw mid-tournament before they played their doubles, but after a singles match at a 25K ITF event, because WADA said she hadn't gone through a 6-month period of proving, her doping tests again. So she's gone through that now. She's going to play with her niece. And hey, at the same point, why not get back together with one of the other all-time, great doubles players of her generation, Bethany Mattek-Sands, who's still going strong and still a very talented doubles player. Be a little interesting because she's really hit her stride with Sofia Kenin, so we'll have to be around that already existing commitment. But I love seeing these players come back and play. These are players that we have fond memories of watching both before, during our time working in the tennis media. And so the tennis fan in me is always happy to see them come back and show what they still have.
Yeah, and we know the ability, I think, especially for doubles players to really extend their careers and have continued success. Not to suggest Safarova is planning a full extension of her career. Has the two kids, the cool connection, obviously having her husband Thomas Plekanec, who had a great NHL career, and then picking and choosing what do the kids want to play. And I was sort of glad to hear from her side she wants to kind of allow them to choose the sports they're most interested in.
And so cool that she wants, as part of the motivation is that she wants her kids to see her play a professional tennis match or two, a couple
Yeah.
tournaments or whatever it turns out to be. I mean, I get stoked when my kids come out and see me play hockey at the local rink. I'm sure for you, your nieces, nephews, when they get to see you hit a few tennis balls, it's kind of cool when you've got that. Yeah, I get to show off a little bit. And of course, the kids, I mean, if the kids think we're pretty good at what we do, you can only imagine what their kids are going to think when they see them get back out there.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And I like how much she obviously valued her opportunity to play the Olympics, which she represented Czech 3 times, which is a lot given the gap in time for Olympic years, this one being a special one. But only getting that opportunity every 4 years, there's a lot of pride there, I think, in representing her country. And we see that with the success, obviously, she had in Fed Cup, now Billie Jean King Cup with the Czech team, which was just such a loaded roster when she was there. I mean, it's still strong now, but you think about throwing Lucy Safarova in the mix, doubles and singles as an option. Yeah, they were unbeatable for a period of time.
And you think of how we feel having one Davis Cup championship and one Billie Jean King Cup championship,
Yeah.
which are both fantastic achievements for the men and the women. But to be able to do that 5 times through the course of your career is just next level that we can, aspire to do, hopefully one day, of course, with the program here. And some people might think, well, it's a little early to be talking about the Olympics. I feel like we've mentioned the Olympics a little bit the last few episodes, but I'm of the same mentality that she is. I put it at the same level as the Grand Slams. And the fact that it only comes along once every 4 years, it's a super rare thing. It means a lot to the players who are able to walk away with a medal in singles or in doubles. And so, yeah, even though it's not happening till July, I'm already getting pretty excited to see how it's going to unfold.
Yeah, I can tell. I think more hype has been built up, I want to say, over the last 20 years or so, especially on the tennis side of things for the Olympics, of the pride of competing in that event and getting the opportunity to play. Feels like a good segue of, talking about Billie Jean King Cup and that we had qualifiers over the weekend and seeing the countries advance. Great for Canada because they have that spot secured in the final stage. Lieu of their victory last season, so you guarantee yourself a place. But Great Britain was, for me, the kind of the story of the weekend. Not just advancing, but the fact that Emma Raducanu, who memorably beat our Leyla Annie Fernandez in that U.S. Open final back in 2021, I have to say this was, I think, maybe the best tennis she has played since then. And that obviously gives you a bit of a story into how rough it's kind of been over the past couple of seasons, countless injuries, I think struggling with pressure from media expectations and not really stringing together victories. For her to be in a team environment, beat a quality player like Caroline Garcia, come back from a set down, beat someone like Dianne Perry. I wonder if this is going to be a bit of a stepping stone for her in her season.
Be nice because her ranking, you got to go way down to find her in the rankings now, just outside the top 300. But you also got to keep in mind that, she was out from last April until the start of this tennis season. That's a significant amount of time to miss. She's played about 8 tournaments, I think, now and is starting to put it back together. I mean, this year she's got what a win over Marie Boskova, who's a quality
Yep.
opponent. She pushed Alina Svitolina earlier this year, who's always a tough one. And now hopefully this is something that gives you some added sort of confidence moving forward. And you don't ever want someone to regret a big moment in their career, something that should be looked upon purely with positive memories and energy, such as winning a Grand Slam. And I'm not speaking for her, but you get the sense that it has been a bit of a burden almost that she had that success so early and so soon in terms of the reaction, the negative reaction and the pressure that's been placed on her. And so yeah, I really, every time she gets a win, I can't help but cheer. Even though she beat Leyla Annie Fernandez in that final, I do have a soft spot in my heart for her and hope that things work out moving forward for sure.
Yeah, I think probably some Canadian tennis fans may have felt that in a sense. And this was more than one tournament, keep in mind, but Jeannie Bouchard and some of the struggles she went she went through after, that huge season and making Wimbledon final and pressure and expectations. And she almost went out of her way at one point to call it a burden, as she was obviously struggling with being the Canadian number one, being someone who
Well,
was in
she
the
did,
top
yeah.
10. Yeah. So,
When
you know.
Bianca, I remember when Bianca took over that number one ranking,
Yeah.
we were in a press conference with her, actually with Jeannie, and I mentioned to her, how does it feel to have someone else taking on that role? And she was joking, it was kind of tongue in cheek, but she exactly what you said. She said she joked, like, yeah, someone else can carry that burden right now. And on some level, there was some truth behind that for
Yeah,
sure.
I think so. Just to quickly wrap, US, Japan, Slovakia, Poland, Germany, Romania, all booking their place to the finals group stage over the weekend. Cool to see like Jessica Pegula going and representing for the United States, playing great. Iga Świątek getting it done for Poland, and Naomi Osaka with a couple big wins for Japan. So we had some superstar players go and compete for the qualifiers, getting their place there. Now we shift over. You look at some of these strong rosters, obviously, and we have to wonder, is it feasible for Canada to repeat? Obviously, this is months away, but now we get a sense of who they're going to be competing against.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing for me. Like, Canada is not the favorite, and they might not even be necessarily close to the favorite, but they're definitely a team that's going to be in the mix every time they go if they've got, the big weapons, and that's Leila Annie Fernandez, who always plays terrific for Team Canada. Next level stuff from her when representing, her country. Gabby Dabrowski is the fourth ranked women's doubles player, so she's always going to be money. And then, if we can get some supporting characters in there like Marina Stakušić, I don't think necessarily we can expect the same level from her in her repeat performance. Rebecca Marino, I know her ranking's fallen out of the top 100, 150, but veteran presence. And then, my goodness, we've seen enough clips of her on the practice courts lately, and hopefully that bodes well for a return to the game. But if we could get a healthy Bianca Andreescu in the mix as well, she is for sure a top 30 type player when she's healthy. And you put her and Layla together in singles, Gabby in the doubles, and that's a squad that nobody is going to relish having to face for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you. Honestly, if I look at all the countries, like you think the US should win this thing if they send everybody in terms of the depth of their roster. If you're bringing Coco Gauff and Pegula, and even those two as an option in doubles, I mean, you talk about someone like a Bethany Mattek-Sands, Sophia Kenin. Like there are a lot of great players. Madison Keys, they have a lot of options at their disposal if they can, get everybody there, which is always a question mark. You never really know depending on the schedule. And sometimes the WTA isn't the best with this, coordinating with the Billie Jean King Cup. If we talk a little more WTA before we shift over to the men's side, Stuttgart this week, it's a 500 level event. All of the top four are there: Iga Świątek, Aryna Sabalenka, Coco Gauff, Elena Rybakina. Iga has won this title two times in a row. I have to say, though, just peeking at the draw, she falls in a section with Linda Noskova, who beat her in Australia, and Yelena Ostapenko is a potential matchup in there too. And she's 0-4 against her. So a tough draw for Iga, but it is on the clay.
I like it because we've got like the top four contenders for Roland Garros, the top four contenders
Yeah.
for clay in general with those four players that you mentioned. And last year we had one versus two with Swiatek defeating Sabalenka in the finals. And it'd be great if we could see, I think, really any combination of those four players go head to head again. I just love the buildup in the clay court season. The Aussie Open has such a short buildup. Grass court a little bit more lengthy, but no real 1,000 level tournaments. Even hard court in the summertime before the US Open, you've got Canada and Cincy really as the big ones. Clay just seems to have so many big time events, and even the ones that aren't 1,000 level tournaments like this one, when you've got those four top players there, makes it seem bigger than it actually is. So one thing I got to give credit to the clay court season is it knows how to build to the culminating point there.
Yeah, and especially Stuttgart just being a draw of 32. On the women's side, you get those kind of mouth-watering matchups really early in the tournament. Like I think I saw Raducanu against Kerber as a first-round match, which is awesome. So there's going to be plenty of those. Always get that on the women's side, which is great. And we'll see. Can Iga three-peat there? Aryna Sabalenka has lost three consecutive finals in Stuttgart as well. So we'll see if she can maybe break through. Speaking of breaking through, Monte Carlo Masters 1000 wrapping, and Stefanos Tsitsipas. Now he's won this title three times, getting his first win of the season, defeated Casper Ruud in the final 6-1, 6-4. What a tournament, and absolutely the best tennis we've seen from Stefanos Tsitsipas in, I feel like, maybe over a year.
Yeah, Tsitsipas is a funny guy because he can go through stretches where it clicks. I mean, last summer he won in, what was it, Los Cabos?
Yes.
He had a pretty decent indoor season. Like, I was going back and looking at what he did in the fall. He made the semis at the Paris Masters, losing to Dimitrov in a third set breaker. And Dimitrov was playing terrific tennis post-US yep. Open. But then I feel like, yeah, he gets into a stretch where maybe it's not clicking and his ranking falls out of the top 10 for a little bit. And you can kind of forget about him because of the most recent events that he's been in. But on clay, I mean, this is a terrifically consistent tennis player. When we did our power rankings for Tennis Canada recently, I certainly had him ranked higher than where his ranking is right now based on what he's capable of doing. And you see, like, a tournament, this one, obviously he's got the mojo there. He feels comfortable there. The perfect kind of place to reignite those confident feelings on the surface. Look, we've seen him go deep at Roland Garros and come so close, actually, really, you know, yep. too close almost. The poor guy with what happened against Djokovic a couple of years ago. This is good for him, and I think puts him back into that conversation to make it a little bit more competitive heading into Roland Garros on the men's side, maybe.
Yeah, and look, three consecutive top 10 wins. First time he'd beaten three top 10 players in one tournament since Toronto. National Bank Open 2018, when actually he took down four top 10 players en route to the final before losing to Rafael Nadal in that final. I remember that tournament. What a sensational run. And that was kind of a, at the time, really a breakthrough moment for him. And we remember the Greek crowd that was filling the stadium in Toronto. He had such a great crowd support. The atmosphere there was kind of electric all week. And that was sort of one of the big moments early on in Tsitsipas's career.
Really, that kind of put him on the map, I feel like. And he was so embraced by the crowd here. It almost felt like he was a Canadian, or that he was like a home talent being supported by the crowd. And, you know, what I love about that run is it wasn't just some flash in the pan. I mean, he's had a stellar career since then.
Yep.
And at that time, you still had, you know, big three going strong. Federer was still doing damage back in 2018. Nadal and Djokovic clearly since then have done so much as well. He's been in the game at a difficult time where those three were still very much it in men's tennis. And now he's got to try and, you know, reassert himself with the young guys coming up like Alcaraz and Sinner, because he's in that in-between phase, but still young, still lots of time ahead, and still someone who I think is going to have his say in the men's tennis landscape before, you know, he hangs up his racket, which is still many, many years away, of course.
Yeah, undoubtedly. I mean, the final itself, lopsided, 6-1, 6-4. Great kind of comeback win over Jannik Sinner in three sets. Casper Ruud, though, you know, despite the finals result, great, great tournament. First time he's defeated a world number one after several tries, finally defeats Novak Djokovic in a topsy-turvy kind of tough semifinal match. Ruud led 4-1 in the third set. You know, I watched this match. Novak seemed to be shifting momentum, hit a huge signature backhand down the line, was roaring as he broke back. It felt like the tide was turning, but Ruud kind of held his nerve. And Djokovic double faulting actually on his the third match point opportunity, which Casper Ruud said maybe that was a gift from the heavens that he finally got his first victory over Novak. But I feel like this was also a big moment for a player who has had, you know, struggles in 2023, but another guy we've seen compete in Grand Slam finals before. And I guess the knock on Ruud really has been, we haven't seen him win one of these big time tournaments, but he's getting close.
Yeah, he's in that contender conversation for sure for me. And even though the final didn't play out as competitively as some might have wanted to see, there's no doubt that Ruud leaves this tournament feeling pretty darn good about himself, especially getting that win against Djokovic. I mean, if you beat any of these big three guys for the first time, that is a major deal. That is like, oh, yeah, something you're going to look back upon, maybe more later at the end of your career, and tell your kids or grandkids or whatever about it. But for right now, that's got to be a huge, you know, boost. And yeah, look, Djokovic hasn't had the best start to his season, of course, but still semifinals of Australia and semis here. I think Novak's got to take some positivity from this for sure, while playing with, maybe it's a temporary association, but playing with a new coach in his box as well, in former doubles player Nenad Zimonjic, who used to partner with Danny Nestor, Canadian Danny Nestor, for a little while anyways. So I think for Djokovic and Djokovic fans, this has to be seen as a positive step forward in the overall 2024 picture for him.
Yeah, especially considering he'd really flopped out of Monte Carlo the past couple of years, those kind of early surprising exits. I think Davidovich-Fokina beat him early last year. I remember a really bad loss maybe to Daniel Evans a few years ago. So Monte Carlo of late hasn't been the best to Djokovic. I agree with you that this is probably a good step in the right direction for him. Felix Auger-Aliassime, he won his first match against Luca Nardi, actually the Italian qualifier who beat Djokovic at Indian Wells. And it looked like the draw was opening up. Carlos Alcaraz pulled out with an arm injury. So suddenly he's facing lucky loser, another Italian, Lorenzo Sonego, who's, a good player. But I feel like we haven't seen Felix impose himself and beat one of these good quality players all season, and again was unable to do so, falling in the second round.
If we could just put some of these clay courts indoors, maybe that would click for Felix. Maybe that's what
Maybe.
he just needs the security blanket of the walls and the roof. I don't know, but I joke, but yeah, I want to see it click for him. He's so likable. He works so hard. He does so much good stuff off the tennis court. But of course, none of that is going to go out there and get the wins for you. You got to go out there and battle and do that, and it's one-on-one at that point. And is he still working with Uncle Tony at all? Like, I don't feel like I've heard that name.
You know what? It really just seems like to be Frederic Fontaine who's there in his box each and every week, and that consulting deal with Uncle Tony. Like, I haven't really seen Tony Nadal, his presence there at any tournament for Felix. Not that I've noticed all season. So maybe that's not even really an existing partnership right now.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it, and maybe we talk a little bit also about, speaking of Nadal, some big
Yeah.
news. I know it probably got you excited, it got me excited. I don't think any tennis fan couldn't have heard this and thought, oh, finally, are we actually going to see him? But he's slated to play in Barcelona as things look right now.
Yeah, he is confirmed to play. And I think we had to hear it, the words directly from his mouth, before we could actually report that Rafael Nadal is going to play, because he wanted to play Monte Carlo badly, but never confirmed that he would, and still didn't feel his body was ready, pulled out there. But he says his body is fit enough to give this one a go. I feel like this one is extra special playing the Barcelona Open, obviously his home Spanish event. They have a court named after him there, Pista Rafa Nadal. He's a 12-time champion, and he'll open against the Italian Flavio Cabolli. Now, I will say, if you watched his press conference, I mean, someone asked for an injury update to get it going, and he said, I can't give you an injury update. The list is too long. So maybe we should kind of, and look at this tournament, go in with a grain of salt, realizing it's not a healthy, spry Rafael Nadal playing. It's unfortunate, I think, a legend maybe on his last legs.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of entered my head right now for the first time, and I'm not trying to get you down here, but is there any chance that this is a goodbye, that hey, my body is just not holding up and this is going to have to be it? Kind of, I think back to Wayne Gretzky when he decided to hang up his skates. He only told people with two games left in the regular season back in 1999, and he only got like one game at Madison Square Garden where the fans were standing for him. Could this be how Nadal chooses to do it? Maybe not in a best of five at Roland Garros, but in a best of three, and says, goodbye to everybody at a place that was also very special to him, obviously.
I have to say, I think he'll be so determined to drag his body over to Roland Garros, find a way to play that tournament one last time, regardless. But definitely, when we were hearing last summer suggestions, maybe 2024 may or may not be my final year, it's really hard to picture Rafa playing into 2025 in his current state. I will say that pretty definitively right now, at least.
Well, we'll be back next week, hopefully, with some positive news to share. Hopefully, some on-court results and whatnot from Rafa as we dig a little deeper into this clay season. But I'm stoked so far with how things have started. It's just got me excited for the next few tournaments leading up to Roland Garros, and we're gonna have some big guests to help us get there as well over the next few weeks. So looking forward to that too, to share that with our listeners and our viewers who are checking us out on YouTube at Tennis Canada as well. We're promoting us there, so we should probably share that with our listeners, those of you who are listening in. If you want to see us, as well as Lucy Safra, over this week and video, check us out on the Tennis Canada YouTube page too.
Yeah, guys, stay tuned. Also, happy birthday. Happy belated birthday to Denis Shapovalov, who has turned 25. Guys, you've been listening to Matchpoint Canada. We will talk to you next time.